On a very exciting edition of the Going Overtime Wrestling Podcast here on InsideSTL.com. Starts right now. I am Joe Roderick. He is John Marasek. And John, I was looking forward to this past Sunday for so long, and I got to say, the weekend itself really lived up to expectations, and was one that the wrestling fan Joe Roderick will not soon forget.
You had a big weekend, bro.
I did, and I'm hoping that next weekend continues into that. But we will get into the Vince Russo stuff in just a bit. But it was Money in the Bank weekend here in St. Louis, but it was also the Something to Wrestle With podcast. Conrad Thompson and Bruce Pritchard were in town. John, you got to meet them for a short amount of time at the kitchen sink on Sunday. I got to hang out with them for quite a while this entire weekend.
So hopefully that was just a lot of you sitting there and listening and not speaking.
Pretty much, yeah. That's
the way that it should have been, because you were sending me texts on Saturday night from an interesting, eclectic group of humans that you were surrounded by on Saturday evening, the night before Money in the Bank. And those two guys, Conrad and Bruce, who I was glad that it worked out to where I had to drop some tickets off to you on Saturday morning, on Sunday morning. I got a chance just to say hello to them. Just wonderful, wonderful guys to meet. They were very kind. They were nice enough to come on down and hang out with you and Andy on the show, on your radio show on 590 The Fan on Sunday morning. And what struck me, it kills me about Conrad Thompson. He is just the most real person that there is. That's just the guy you listen to. That's who that was. He was sitting in the kitchen sink. He's going to talks to Tony Schiavone for Monday's show and a Friday show for Bruce Pritchard. Just what a nice guy.
Yeah, I didn't know what to expect from those two guys, especially with the fame that they have received over the last several months, almost a year now. And the two of them just could not have been any nicer. And Conrad, I got to hang out with Conrad and talk to Conrad a lot more than I did with Bruce. And I don't know if that was so much, I don't know if I was, maybe a little intimidated by Bruce, knowing, like, God, this is the guy that did so much in wrestling, and Conrad's just, a fan like I am. But just talking with both of them was really, really cool. And yeah, they both were really great guys. And that live show, I got to tell you, I'm ready to go do another one. I don't know when the next closest one to us would be, but I'm ready to go to another one, because that whole atmosphere, the whole thing was just really, really cool to be a part of. And they do tell stories that are not to be repeated.
It is. I did notice there wasn't a lot shared about the show itself on Twitter, which I thought was pretty cool and pretty respectful for what those guys really want this to be. They want it to be an intimate thing that the however many people are in that venue, that's all they get to experience it. And I think it's pretty neat that it's kind of respected that way. Kind of give people an idea what the format is for these types of events. Because as someone who's never been, it's kind of curious how you take a radio show and then turn it into an interactive live show of some sort.
I really think that for the most part, it was their normal podcast. But this one was kind of focused on not only St. Louis, but also Father's Day, and there was audience participation. You could yell at them during the show. You could throw out, I don't want to say requests, but you can kind of comment on things as they were happening, and a lot of people in the first few rows kind of did that. And I think that, it was, instead of them recording it on a Thursday night and it airing on a Friday, they were doing things live and in person, and you got to sit there and hear stories that were just, they were formed just for you being there in St. Louis, hearing the history. And then they also talked Father's Day as well, because we were there on Father's Day, and they did a little Q&A towards the end too. And there was one guy that flew in from New Zealand to come to this podcast on Sunday.
That's neat. That's humbling.
Yeah, flew from New Zealand, and I was the one going around handing the microphone to people for the Q&A part, and I gave him the mic. I figure you fly from effing New Zealand, you can ask these guys a question in front of everybody. And his question was about why the Jackal didn't have a bigger role in the WWF.
That's awesome.
And Conrad kind of put him in his place. That basically was telling him how dumb of a question it was. Which was funny because the guy from New Zealand later on, that once it all ended, kind of a lot of people were coming up to me thanking me for having them in. And I don't think they realized how nothing I had to do with anything. I mean, I helped set stuff up on Sunday. Other than that, I did nothing for this. But he kind of joked about, he's like, man, they... Conrad really didn't like that question, did he, mate?
Well, you were the host. As far as a lot of those people knew, that's your gig, is to be their hype man.
Yeah, I guess I got to introduce Conrad, and then Conrad introduced Bruce from there. So I guess, yeah, they saw me as the face of the station that brought them into town, sure. Knowing that I really had jack diddly to do with anything that was done on that day. So it was a fun experience to be a part of, and if I got the chance to go to another one, I definitely would. If you're listening to this and you have a chance to go to one, I would do that as well. It was a lot of fun to be there, a lot of fun to hang out with those guys. And then I really was just in awe on Saturday night as I walk into the bar and see Ric Flair sitting there eating dinner with Charlotte. It's a table away, and then I find out it's Baron Von Raschke, and there's Boris Von Raschke.
Baron Von Raschke.
Baron Von Raschke.
And Larry Hennig was there as well, right?
No, Larry Hennig was not there. Greg Gagne was there. Gagne
was there, that's right.
Was there to see Ric Flair wearing a shirt of Ric Flair. Was awesome, and then to find out that Ric Flair paid for all of our bar tabs was wow. Quite incredible as well, that the Nature Boy bought me a few drinks.
Nobody lives the gimmick more than the Nature Boy, Ric Flair.
I know he's had a lot of divorces, but I would still love to know how much he has made in his life, how much he still has in the bank.
How much he has spent.
Yeah.
I would also like to know what that is. He had said some numbers on someone's podcast about needed a six-figure payoff. had to have it to cover an expense of some sort. Just the money he throws, money he would throw, dollar figures he was throwing around in this interview were just things that I can't comprehend. But no, it sounds like you had a pretty cool night. I would love to just sit there and listen to Mr. Gagne and Ric Flair tell Minnesota stories. Just, I could sit there all day and just listen.
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't get to hear any of those. I would have just, if I would have, and that was, I didn't know who Greg Gagne or Boris Von Raschke were. I'm sure there were people there that did know them, that had watched them grow up, but obviously that's a different generation for me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if I would have known that, I might have just bellied up at the bar and just kind of stuck my ear into that conversation.
And Ric Flair on the short list of people who can get away with wearing their own T-shirt out to a restaurant.
Larry Nickel and Ric Flair.
Ric Flair. And, yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah, nobody would ever bat an eye. Flair can walk around wherever he wants with a T-shirt with his face on it. And nobody, there he is.
Yeah. So that took us to Sunday night, the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. And I'm just a quick before we get into everything that happened in those 3 hours, I will say this. I was entertained. I was entertained for 3 hours.
It was a two-match pay-per-view, and I thought the main event, or the actually, I think it was a
three-match, yeah.
With the Orton and Jinder was awesome. The Money in the Bank men's after I threw my tantrum was awesome. And the women's match, it looked like a group of women who've never done a ladder match before, which for the most part, that's what it was. And it had a finish we'd never seen. So I was totally fine with it. The rest of the show was just, it was the rest of the show. It was fine.
We'll start off with the match that did kick the night off. That was the women's Money in the Bank ladder match. Charlotte, Natalya, Tamina, Becky Lynch, and Carmella were your five participants. And the finish came when James Ellsworth knocks Becky off the ladder, climbs up the ladder, grabs the briefcase, and tosses it down to Carmella. This caused a lot of controversy in the evening and also caused a lot of controversy in SmackDown. But as you mentioned, this is the first time that we saw a finish like that.
It was awesome. I thought it was, first off, Tamina Snuka took one of the great whoopings in a match I have ever seen. Nobody took more bumps for the entire night. Owens tried to equal her, but and if you watched SmackDown and you saw the bruise on her left arm, she got smoked. Every time she got up, she'd get one or two licks in and then just get slammed with a ladder. It was incredible. The finish I thought was great. I was when I can get emotionally invested into something, then I think it was fantastic. And I was pissed the way that that finished. And then I realized we've never, ever seen anything like that. And it was awesome. And Carmella's perfect as a Money in the Bank case holder.
Here is kind of what I have. I looking back at it, here is what I can compare it to. And that was a few years ago. I don't remember the year, but I believe it was for the Intercontinental title. There was a ladder match for it. And I didn't do my research on it, but I remember the outcome of it. Two guys were at the top of the ladder fighting over it. They pulled it off at the same time and dropped it. And Kofi Kingston picked it up off the ground. And because it ended up in Kofi's hands, he retained the Intercontinental title. That's how I view this happening. That's how I viewed the ending of that was the first participant of the match that ended with it is who got to keep it.
Yeah. Whoever gets it in their possession wins it. It doesn't, and there's no disqualification and no rules about how it should get there. And within the rules of that match, everything was above board, like it or not.
Should we just go to SmackDown right now and talk about what happened? Because Carmella,
I just watched SmackDown and I'm pissed.
Carmella opened up SmackDown bragging about how she won the title and then goes on to mention the time that Kane helped Seth Rollins win the Money in the Bank, the time Bray Wyatt interfered, costing Roman Reigns Money in the Bank and allowing, Sheamus to win Money in the Bank, and brought up those two examples. That's great that they did not ignore history in times where people interfered. But the difference was that neither Kane nor Bray Wyatt climbed the ladder and took the briefcase down. So therefore, they looked at this as being different. So Carmella was getting amazing heat on her for this. Yeah, she was doing an incredible job. And later in the night, Daniel Bryan comes out, calls out all the women, and strips Carmella of the briefcase, saying that because James Ellsworth was not a part of the match, that she didn't win it. Now, if we're going to go rule books, I mean, come on, you're talking about a company that Edge jumped Kofi Kingston one year and put himself into an Elimination Chamber match just because he locked the door.
I wasn't watching at that point. That's hilarious.
So Carmella now does not have the Money in the Bank briefcase.
Well, and Daniel Bryan was awesome in the way that he got all into Carmella's face in the final in that segment on SmackDown. But you just to pull it away, it's almost like Daniel Bryan went in the ring and threw a tantrum. You can't have it because I've decided that's not the way that it's going to be done. Well, it's within the rules. I don't see anything wrong with it. And almost it minimizes what happened at that pay-per-view. Now it's like that match, the pay-per-view didn't mean jack.
That's
where
it
is at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. This is a huge deal. And Daniel Bryan, as the, you know, it's not his decision, but he's the one who goes out there and basically is the face of crapping on the match that happened here instead of saying that's the way that it happened and then you adjust from there later. But recognize that as the first ever Women's Money in the Bank match. Now that match means nothing.
That's what pisses me off, is that we went to Money in the Bank and we went to the pay-per-view. There were many people in attendance. I mean, that's, by the way, the attendance. I just want to mention that. The attendance was amazing there. Right, top row of Scott Trade was filled.
The that was 15,300 plus.
Yeah. That's,
and it was hot. That place was loud.
That was really amazing, the amount of people they had out there for that event. And I don't think they announced the next time it would come in, but hopefully they see that attendance and they realize they need to keep giving St. Louis big events.
Well, I think part of it too is they want to wait until this building gets redone. The next day, the scoreboard was taken down and renovations have begun at Scott Trade Center, and there isn't another event scheduled in that building until September.
Right. So what does that matter? I mean, the WWE's not going to.
Well, because
back to
you wait and see how it's going to be, because seats
think,
are
well,
being taken
I honest,
out, put
I do,
in, and
yeah.
rearranged, and see how the building is going to be configured before you figure out what event's going to go in there next.
The NHL schedule was announced either yesterday or today. I can't remember if it was announced on Tuesday or Wednesday. So that's honestly what I think one of the reasons might have been for that.
Or that,
was
yeah.
to see when the NHL was going to need that building and then go from there. So that is, I think, the real reason why it was done the way it was.
More than likely you're correct.
Yeah. So they did not announce anything at the event, but you would have to think that it will not be a house show when you get over 15,000 people attending a non-major pay-per-view.
It's pretty close. I mean, it's as close to the big. This to me is. I would rather have this every year than have Survivor Series every year. This is just, you get a guaranteed money match, and you know that going in that you're going to have an awesome ladder match for a contract for the WWE title. You don't need to know anything else, and that's in this card too. It's not like this thing was stacked.
Right.
Again, there were two matches that everybody would be into, and three that some of us are into. Not everybody was hyped to the Jinder and Randy. It is big here, and it was the sound in that building when Jinder and Randy came out was.
By the way,
you put a major card in there, you're going to sell it out, and I think they proved that.
11,000 were in attendance for the pay-per-view, the Raw pay-per-view in Baltimore just a few weeks prior. I am not seeing any attendance listed for the Backlash pay-per-view that was held in.
Was that in Chicago?
That was in Chicago.
Okay, well, that one would have been sold out. They sell out Chicago. They sell out New York. They sell out Philly. Those are automatics.
Well, I'm not seeing anything there, but 11,000 just a few weeks prior to that one. And, so the one here in St. Louis ended up getting 15,000, almost 400 for
attendance. For reference, typical attendance for a TV or pay-per-view in St. Louis is what, 12, 13, something like that? Between 11 and 13,000,
yeah,
I think.
That is the most. There were more people there than Survivor Series a few years ago.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
So that was incredible. Moving down the card, Naomi defeats Lana. Before that, the New Day, they get the countout victory over the Usos. So we'll see that rematch again. Lana didn't do terrible. I mean, she wasn't.
It was fine.
Bad, yeah. And Naomi's entrance in person is really cool too.
It is better. I get it. Yeah, it's definitely much better in person.
I like
it doesn't
TV
come
too.
Across as well as
I think I like. I mean, I think it looks fine on TV. Jinder Mahal against Randy Orton. There were six legends at ringside. Bob Orton brought some friends along. That included Sergeant Slaughter, Ric Flair. As we already mentioned, Greg Gagne, who I saw on Saturday night,
Baron Von Roschke.
Yeah, Von Roschke. And
Larry Hennig.
Oh, yeah, Larry the X, who I got to be honest with you, didn't know he was alive.
Correct. I'm with you. I did want to mention one thing with that. I want to commend the WWE for the way they announced those guys. And I don't know how they discussed him on the television broadcast because I didn't. Well, I still haven't watched that. But when they announced specifically Slaughter and Flair, and they only mentioned their NWA championships. They didn't mention – the only WWE mention with those guys was WWE Hall of Famers. But every other thing was their successes in the National Wrestling Alliance because that's their attachment to the city of St. Louis. And I thought that was really, really cool for an organization that has a history of crapping on everybody else's organizations and putting them at the top. They put the NWA and their success in that organization first before even mentioning that they were WWE Hall of Famers. I thought that was tremendous.
I would have to guess that Harley Race probably was expected to be there leading up to this when this idea was first pitched, but
absolutely,
we know that he's in poor health right now, and I would imagine that Harley Race would have gotten probably a bigger pop than Ric Flair, maybe.
Yeah, that would have been special.
Yeah, at one point in that match, Jinder Mahal. Jinder gets thrown into the lap of all of the of Cowboy Bob Orton and all the other wrestlers that were ringside. They actually took a bump and then they were involved again when Sunil and Sahir, the Singh brothers, end up getting ejected from ringside, and then they go over and try to fight the legends. At one point they grab Cowboy Bob Orton, and Ric Flair just stands there.
He's like, whoa, he's got a great expression, like, whoa. Nobody does anything.
Yeah.
There's two younger men grabbing an older gentleman, and everyone stands there and watches.
Sergeant Slaughter just sits there. Sergeant Slaughter doesn't even stand up. So am I to believe that Sergeant Slaughter is now an Indian sympathizer? He's
turned again.
Yes.
Those were four guys who just wanted to watch the match.
By the way, I don't know you noticed it, but I don't remember which two they were, but two of their wives were also in attendance and sitting about five rows behind them. I think they were actually sitting like behind Patrico, who was at ringside, just a few rows behind them. Because I saw when they were walking out, like, I saw these two older women, and I'm just like, that's got to be somebody. I'm like, there's no way those two women got fifth row floor seats for this event. And then as all the legends were walking out, you see one of the women with one of the guys and then another woman with the other walking out of there. So
that's lovely.
Yeah, they were about the same age as the wrestlers, so I know they weren't with Rick.
Well done.
Mm-hmm. So the match pretty much ends the same way Jinder won the title. Randy once again beats up the Singh brothers, which is pretty entertaining. I don't want to see their next match happen in a cage or a Punjabi prison or whatever's going to happen, because the part of the charm of this rivalry is how Randy Orton beats up the Singh brothers.
Yeah, and also how the Singh brothers in the end are the cause of Randy Orton losing.
Right.
But every time. It is great. And at some point, it's going to end in a cage. It has to end in a cage.
Right.
And again, what's great is this is how you build to a cage match. This is exactly how you do it. You have a reason that you need the cage to keep people out. Actually, it should end in a Hell in a Cell. And you have a cage to keep people out and to keep your opponent in. That's the whole point of having a cage, except in WWE, where the goal is to get in the cage and get out as fast as you possibly can.
Yeah. So by the way, they did talk about the Hell in the Cell at the podcast, the first one being here, and how the whole point of it was to, yes, keep everybody out. And I guess Sean's first idea was, how do I do things on top of the cage?
No, Sean, that's not the point.
Right, and Bruce was just furious by when Sean came up with these examples just of, oh, I could do this on top of it. No, that's not why we're doing the cage.
Defeats the purpose. Especially the first one, you can't do that.
And then we'll have Kane come down. How the hell is he going to get in the cage? No.
Oh,
Yes.
It's the stuff that you don't hear about. You just see the masterpiece in front of you and don't realize all of the fun and games it takes to get to that point.
There was a another storyline idea, and this had to do with Father's Day, that Bruce just said that he sat in the room when Vince pitched it, and he said, "I just waited for somebody more important than me to step up and say, no, this is a terrible idea, don't do it." And then it was Jerry Briscoe that chimed in and goes, "Boss, I could see that working out."
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good stuff. See, it's worth your $50 to go and grab a seat and watch this. Watch that show. That's good.
So Jinder Mahal gets the win over Randy Orton, and he retains his title. So Jinder Mahal is going to be main eventing a third pay-per-view in the WWE.
That's awesome. Boy, the crowd was not happy about it either.
He is so good right now, too.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He really is good.
Another one whose entrance in person, fantastic.
I did have somebody in the section that I was sitting in, I guess, listened to the interview with Jinder Mahal and got my attention as he was coming down, wondering if he was going to get a mic or not to see if he was going to rip the blues like I suggested Jinder do.
That would have been fantastic. I did enjoy that there was a pocket of the crowd with a Maharaja chant. That was wonderful to hear. His gear is selling. People are wearing his shirts.
I saw so many Jinder Mahal shirts.
That's awesome. It's really a neat story.
Oh. So that was a fun match. I'm not even the Breezango thing just pissed me off.
We went to the potty because we had the big match coming.
The only good thing about that was the cell phone. We talk about the corkboard and the hidden jokes in there. He had a Zach Morris, Fandango had a Zach Morris cell phone, and on it was written "Property of Paul E."
Yes, that was fantastic too. The awesome Paul E. Dangerously reference.
Yeah, so that was good. Main event time, as AJ Styles, Dolph Ziggler, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens are all introduced. They all come down to the ring. Shinsuke Nakamura's music hits. The crowd is ready to sing, but Baron Corbin jumps him from behind and beats him up and smashes cameras on top of him, stopping his music and taking him out of the match. Which do you think got brought considerable heat on Baron Corbin? Do you think it was because people couldn't sing his song or because people weren't going to get to watch him wrestle?
Both. I think it was both. That place shut down. Literally shut down for like 5 minutes. And it was bizarre. I was having a personal tantrum myself in my seat. Mm-hmm. I sent you a text. I wanted to go home.
Right.
I was totally ready to go home. I was done.
Did you not think he was coming back out?
It didn't matter. It didn't matter.
Because you wanted to sing his entrance music.
I wanted to sing the song. I wanted to sing along with The Rock, and I didn't get a chance to. It was really weird, though. For a guy who has had such a limited amount of exposure in the United States and is to the bulk of WWE fans, to have that kind of an impact when his entrance is stopped is very, very unique.
Yeah.
That says a lot about where he is. I mean, that it did surprise me. I mean, I've known who he is before he got to NXT and really fell in love as a performer while he was in NXT. But yeah, there were a lot of people, and I got messages on Twitter were pissed because they came to see his entrance.
Because
his entrance is that impactful.
They did give you the payoff later on, though, as Baron Corbin was getting ready to climb the ladder and his music hit again. They cut it off right before the part where the crowd is supposed to join in, and the crowd at Scottrade did one hell of a job continuing the music.
Yeah, what, for another 15, 20 seconds, we mm-hmm. all screamed at the top of our lungs?
Yeah.
Like, this is what we came for!
Yeah, and good for the WWE, awesome. I mean, knowing that, knowing when to cut it off, and the crowd doing a hell of a job to continue it. But Wrestling Logic, the time that it took Shinsuke Nakamura to walk down the entrance, Baron Corbin could have climbed the ladder and grabbed the briefcase.
Well, of course. But God bless whoever made the decision to set the match up that way. It was kind of dangerous because they did. They killed that building. And it took Kevin Owens taking monumental bumps on ladders to bring people back in. But they got all 15-3 the second that Shinsuke's music hit. Everybody was 100% back in it. And the payoff and the finish and the end of the show were they had the whole building. It was well done and tremendous entertainment.
I was not expecting them to play the music again. I was surprised by that because I spent most of the match watching the entrance, waiting for him to run back out.
If they'd have done it that way, it would have killed it.
Right.
That music hitting that building, Ed building made a noise. It was like the Randy Orton thing was incredible. Jinder's reception when he came out was incredible. And then Shinsuke, when he came back out, and those were three of the loudest sounds you'll hear in Scott Trade Center.
The other big bump of the night, as you mentioned, Kevin Owens taking a few through ladders. The biggest one of the night, I think, was AJ Styles, who at one point grabbed onto the briefcase and Dolph Ziggler moved the ladder, and AJ was just hanging there in midair 15 feet above the ring. It looked like he started to climb up and then came back down and didn't know what to do and then finally just let go and fell face first onto the mat.
That was pretty creative. I don't know that I've seen a guy try and figure out how to get the case while hanging up there. Usually it's just hanging up there and not knowing what to do.
I didn't even think of that he was trying to figure out how to get it off of there. That's why he kept climbing up. I hadn't thought of that.
Maybe if I go up a little bit, then I'll be able to... Nope, that's not going to work. Yeah, it was great. And then how about the moment with AJ and Shinsuke? You can't recreate that one.
No, moving the ladder out of the way to start going at it. That was really cool. Those two have history, and it's been well documented.
Yeah. When those two locked eyes and no one else was around, they could have just done that for five more minutes and left the case up there and we'd all been happy.
Baron Corbin ends up getting the win though.
Who's perfect for it?
Yeah, he ends up getting the win. So now he is your Money in the Bank, Mr. Money in the Bank for the for now in on SmackDown.
Unless they take it away from him too.
I don't think they can with him. I think he has it.
Well, they can't take it away from Carmella, but they did that.
Well, they're not going. The SmackDown is passed, and he still has it. So, yeah. Anything while we're talking SmackDown, while we have the pay per view, anything from SmackDown that stood out? We already talked Carmella. Anything else that has stood out to you from what you watched in SmackDown that needs to be recapped from this pay per view?
Well, taking from Baron Corbin, him coming out with the case in Jinder's match. I would love to see, I've said this every year, I would love to see whoever has the case to always pop in, whether they're watching from the ramp or just kind of lingering around ringside or doing commentary, whatever it is. If you have that case and the champion is there, the guy with the case should be there. And I love that Carmella came out on Sunday night during Naomi's match. And I love that Baron Corbin came out just to taunt. They don't need the music every time, for God's sakes. That gets a little ridiculous. But just to walk around the ring with the case so Jinder Mahal could see that he's there.
The music does need to hit because people know what Baron Corbin's music is now. And any time that the champion right now, Jinder Mahal, is in a match, when that music hits, the crowd is going to erupt because the crowd is thinking, oh my God, we're about to see a title change in person. So I do think that the music needs to hit because that's how you get the crowd to pop.
Okay, fair enough. I see your point. You're right.
Yeah, that's the way it's always been. Ever since the first time Edge cashed in, and I guess the second cash in was Rob Van Dam actually announcing when he was going to cash in. But every time it's been a surprise cash in, the music has to hit. So the crowd erupts thinking, oh my God, we're about to see this happen.
But if it's a consistent thing and the guy's just going to come out every now and then and linger and it becomes a weekly deal, do you need the music every single time?
I'm fine with
that. That's what I'm saying. Okay. That's fine.
Every week now, you just wait for it to happen. And you think, is this going to be the time it happens?
I hope he does it every week. It'd be. I think it's great. I think it's logical. It's illogical to think the guy with the case isn't paying attention.
Right. So we got SmackDown out of the way, so let's get to Raw. 3 hours of Monday Night Raw. We knew that Roman Reigns was going to open up Raw with his SummerSlam announcement. So he comes out. He says that he brags about retiring. The Undertaker, he says that he cannot be beaten one-on-one. He says you could ask Bray Wyatt, Finn Balor, Seth Rollins, Braun Strowman, who then he reminds you that he put him out of commission. He said he retires The Undertaker. Reigns says that he doesn't care who has the title after Great Balls of Fire. He says that he will be the number one contender at SummerSlam because it's his yard and he makes the rules. Samoa Joe
Damn it.
Comes out. Notice I didn't mention Samoa Joe's name because Roman Reigns has not beaten Samoa Joe. He's 0-1 against him in his career. And the two of them kind of go at it. They brawl a little bit. And they end up getting out of it. They end up getting out of it both without the finisher hit on either guy. And we find out later on in the show that that's going to be your main event match for the night. Roman Reigns and Samoa Joe. That's your big match for the evening. You like these two going at it again?
First segment was awesome. Roman Reigns is going to be a great heel if they ever let him be. He's going to be fantastic. I mean, that promo in the ring.
He's a heel to everybody but Vince.
I know. That felt real. Like, that felt like he was totally off the cuff, just working with a couple of bullet points, and then you take it from there. That was tremendous. And this is the second consecutive week, by the way, that Samoa Joe's in the opening segment. It's the best segment of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And he's Samoa Joe. He's fantastic. And he is a guy you could just say, here, we just need to get this over. You go ahead and go get that done. He's fantastic. And those guys working together, yeah, that what we got is a not even going on the last segment of Raw could headline a major pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm. The Hardys beat Gallows and Anderson. Keep going through that. Goldust invites R-Truth to next week's Raw in Los Angeles for the debut of his latest motion picture. R-Truth later in the night accepts that. This is one I do want to spend some time on. Elias Samson is in the ring, and he is about to sing a song to Evansville, Indiana, but has to tune his guitar first. But he is interrupted by Finn Balor. Finn Balor comes down. Samson leaves the ring. Finn Balor has a match against Bo Dallas.
And Bo, by the way, making the Hulu cut.
A few times.
Yeah, Bo on Hulu. That doesn't happen. Hardy's not on Hulu. Dallas on Hulu.
Finn Balor gets the win, and then later on backstage, Finn Balor is being interviewed. And this is, I have not been surprised by jumping backstage until Elias Samson jumped Finn Balor. That made me jump.
Yeah, out of nowhere. Very, very, very unexpected, which is nice to see.
Very aggressive.
Unexpected. But these two together, they need other opponents before they get together, right? These are guys you're building up to win, right?
I guess it doesn't scream pay-per-view match to me. This doesn't scream Great Balls of Fire match.
Well, it's just beginning. But these two guys, you have two young guys to the WWE, and I said not young in years necessarily, but young WWE years, they still need to build both of these guys up, especially Elias, who I just, you know, the sitting thing just drives me up a wall.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, at least it is nice to see fresh matchups, something that you haven't seen. And that's also something you wouldn't expect.
The backstage, Corey Graves walks off again and he talks to Kurt Angle, says he got the same text that Kurt Angle did on Father's Day and he has a plan. But before they're able to go into the plan, Enzo and Cass walk in. Angle says that he's going to get to the bottom of it by the end of the evening. So we still get the Corey Graves, Kurt Angle, who's texting him thing. It's just weird. There's nothing to that. Like, there's no, we don't know what these texts are about. We don't know, is it somebody harassing Kurt? Is it somebody in personal life, professional life? We don't know what's going on. It's just now it's just weird.
And then there were 2 weeks where it didn't even get addressed.
Yeah.
Like the oops, we forgot a pay-per-view went by and wasn't addressed. Yeah, it's very, very odd. But there's a payoff at the end, so we'll get there.
No, there's still no payoff to Corey Graves and Kurt Angle's texting.
Well, no, I guess you're right.
Yeah, those are two. Kurt Angle was involved in two separate storylines. Yeah.
Yeah, and we can't follow any of them.
I don't get it. Yeah, that's whatever. Or Seth Rollins down in the ring, he announces that he is the face of WWE 2K18. Bray Wyatt comes on the screen and lets Rollins know that he's there.
Why are these two guys going at it? I can't figure this out.
Yeah. He comes down to the ring when the lights come back on. Seth Rollins is top rope and dives onto Bray Wyatt. That was pretty cool.
Yes, but I don't know why Bray is so upset with Seth. And vice versa.
I think Rollins is just kind of rolling with it. Right?
Seth is the face of the video game is kind of strange.
Have you seen the promo for the video game?
I have not.
It's pretty cool.
I'm sure it is.
It's Seth Rollins destroying like every artifact of WWE history that there's ever been.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. To make his own name, to pave his own path.
Was he slaying all of the kings in the history of the WWE?
I think he does have the King Slayer shirt at some point on.
That's what he should have done. Like he takes out Haku and the Macho Man and Harley Race and Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
He was the King of the Ring?
Huh?
Hacksaw Jim Duggan was King of the Ring?
He's King Duggan. Remember, there was the time when the King actually meant something.
I don't remember him winning it.
They had King Haku, they had the Macho King and the King Haku. And
I remember those.
King Duggan.
I don't remember King Duggan. Backstage, Bo Dallas.
I don't know that he won anything. I think because they would have a match for the crown. They would just have the crown is on the line.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think that's how King Duggan won. I don't know if he beat Haku or who he beat. Haku might be my favorite king of all time.
Bo Dallas is backstage and he's upset. By the way, Bo Dallas, very scruffy, very long hair, beard is everywhere. Curtis Axel also, bearded gentleman is also there trying to, I guess, calm him down, cheer him up, maybe, if you will, over his loss when The Miz comes in and says that he would like them to join his entourage and promises to make them stars if they were. He walks off, Bo and Curtis kind of just look at each other, and we find out what happens later on in the night. Roman Reigns versus Samoa Joe is kind of ending the 8 o'clock hour going into the 9 o'clock hour. These two go at it for quite a bit, and at one point in the match, we hear an ambulance backstage start backing up into the arena. Roman Reigns stops to look at the screen to see what's going on, and as I predicted last week, Braun Strowman returns.
You were correct. Did you like the way they did it, though? It was kind of odd.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of knew who it was going to be, right? I mean, was there any doubt in your mind?
I'm big on logic. And then all of a sudden on the screen is an ambulance backing into the arena with a camera on it. And then he jumps out of a pristine ambulance. There's like nothing in it.
Right.
And then, I don't know, it seemed rushed. The whole sequence just seemed rushed and kind of awkward. And just, I'm going to run in, throw you ambulance match, and we go to commercial. Just, it seemed like it was quick. Like it could have, like it wasn't drawn out or built up.
Joe did get the Samoa Joe gets the win over Roman Reigns. He does lock in the Coquina Clutch and gets him to pass out. So he does get the win in this scenario. And then Braun comes down, beats him up, tells him he's not finished with you, and then says they have the ambulance. Something about Braun Strowman having to say "Great Balls of Fire" did make me laugh.
I hate the name of the pay per view. Yeah, God, terrible. I hate the name.
It's terrible.
It really sounds terrible. It's like, we're going to have an ambulance match at Great balls of fire.
Yeah.
And really?
We get the Miz in the ring. He has two bears with him this week as he looks to apologize to Maurice. Dean Ambrose makes his way down and ends up causing Miz to ruin the grandfather clock again. Maurice gets mad because she also spills champagne on herself. She leaves the ring, and then the Bears jump Dean Ambrose. Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas are inside the Bears, and they now have a purpose on Monday Night Raw.
And I like angry Bo. Bo's very upset.
He hasn't had anything to do the last few weeks, and his brother's getting divorced.
Oh, is he? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Because Bray has been sleeping with the ring announcer.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well, yeah.
A bully for him.
Yeah. So.
To each their own.
They are, so Miz has, I guess, has the two guys at least now in his entourage.
That's great. I like it. I want Miz to have a stable. I think I told you that, 2 years ago? Miz with a stable as the mouthpiece is going to be sensational.
I don't think he ever really has had an entourage. He had Alex Riley with him for a while and Michael Cole, but never really had an entourage.
Yeah, this has a chance to be really, really good if they let it play out.
Yeah.
Don't bail.
I'm just going to skip ahead to the end of the night. Cesaro good. And Sheamus beat the Titus brand, and Nia Jax wins via DQ over Sasha Banks. But the thing to end Raw is Kurt Angle in the ring addressing who has been jumping Enzo Amore and Big Cass. He calls Enzo and Cass down to the ring. He then calls the Revival down to the ring and the Big Show down to the ring. As he sits there and talks with all of them, Big Show gets upset that he is even being included in this and says that maybe he doesn't want to be on Kurt Angle's show anymore after all
like
the
that.
Years of being friends. Yeah, I wouldn't mind Big Show showing up to SmackDown after all this now. The Revival also says that they haven't done it either. And Kurt Angle says that they have very strong alibis and says they can go as well. And that's when Corey Graves stands up and says that Big Cass has been lying to everybody about the lump on his head, about talking to medics, about being cleared for the match last week. And Corey Graves has security footage, which shows Big Cass setting up the backstage area to look like he was attacked, thus never actually being attacked.
They've put a lot of work into this whole angle. This is a big deal. For Enzo and Cass to be involved in this, some of this taking this much planning, this much detail to make sure things were done right, followed a story that was going to be told 3-4 weeks after some of that stuff was shot. This is a huge deal for both of them, and especially for Kaz, because we know this is his jumping off point to something that when he came in, you knew they have big plans for him at some point. I just hate that these two never got a run together.
Well, that's part
as
of the story.
Tag team champion.
That's part of the story now, and part of the push is that Kaz blames Enzo for never winning the tag titles.
Yeah, that's true because he loses every time.
Yeah. Cass did cut one hell of a promo on Enzo, and my God, Enzo standing in the middle of the ring and actually shed a real tear.
It was pretty cool. Go watch some earlier NXT stuff from like 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Watch Cass try and do a promo, and then watch what happened on Monday night. It's remarkable.
You got to wonder what Enzo is thinking as all this is happening to actually get himself to cry. I'm thinking it's either, I'm thinking it's, is he making himself believe that his best friend is actually saying all these things, or is it Enzo realizing that his career in the WWE might actually be coming to an end?
It's not coming to an end. You talk like that, and you're that over with the fans, he's not going anywhere. He'll have a role of some sort as long as he can talk. But if you put yourself there and you're one of your best friends in the entire world, it's just crapping on you and blaming you for everything that's happened in his life for about 3 or 4 minutes, you could get lost in that and cry. That's acting.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. But with the pile up right now in the main event scene, I do wonder what that means for Cass, where that puts him, especially as a heel, where that might put him. But it was, the thing about Raw right now is they're you know, with SmackDown, I wonder where Ty Dillinger is. I wondered where Eric Rowan and Luke Harper have been. Even Luke Harper was in the main event this week against Jinder Mahal. I wondered, after Mike and Maria Kanellis debut at Money in the Bank, they weren't on SmackDown this week. There's stories on SmackDown that aren't getting time. We're on Raw. We're getting a story with the women. Multiple stories with the women. We're getting the story with Samoa Joe's and a couple different storylines. We're getting Roman and Braun. We're getting Seth Rollins and Bray Wyatt. We're getting Goldust and R-Truth. They have a story.
It's 3 hours.
Right, but there are about 7 or 8 stories going on in Raw right now, and some of them, yes, they suck, but they're giving people an actual purpose.
They also just had to clean up a pay-per-view. They had a pay-per-view where they only needed 2 to 3 matches to sell that pay-per-view.
Yeah.
How long do they have until their next one? Do they
July
have one
9th.
Before SummerSlam?
July
we
9th.
Had this talk last week.
Yeah, July 9th is when Great Balls of Fire is.
That's the Raw one.
Yes.
I meant the SmackDown guys.
Oh, the SmackDown one. Yes,
have one more.
They have one more. I'm not sure what the name of it is though. I could look
okay,
real
so
quick.
I think they have. Don't they get Battleground? Is that what it is?
That might be it. Yeah.
All right. So yeah, that would be it because it goes into SummerSlam. So that would be they probably have 3-4 weeks before they get to that thing. They cleaned up Money in the Bank Monday. They've got a ladder match on Tuesday. They got a match on Tuesday, and then everything else is kind of free. Everything else is kind of figured out. You've got the tag thing, and you've got Cena coming. Well, that's the other thing too. He's got to act. How much gets put into place before he comes back?
Right.
So I mean, the plus is they have a 2-hour show, so nobody gets overexposed. So when Ty Dillinger shows up, it's a big deal. He's been gone for a couple of weeks. It's not being smothered with the same guys, especially the top guys, twice a show. You see Roman Reigns 2 times a show. You're now seeing Samoa Joe 2 times a show instead of 1 or every other week. It's one of the pluses, but I understand what you're saying. It's a huge difference in the way the two shows are being produced or shot or written.
I was happy to see that a non-match ended, that an angle that's not a main event angle ended Raw. That's different. Similar to a few weeks ago when they had a match kick off Raw. That's different. They are doing different things than what you normally tune in and expect to see at certain times.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. Like I remember when the women first started and they put the women in the first segment the first time and it was noticeable. It's like, wow, Triple H and Stephanie aren't out. Which is sad when you can say that, hey, we're used to seeing the exact same 2 people come out every week to start the show.
Yeah, so I thought maybe the payoff to this was a little rushed, but I guess we're going to get probably Enzo versus Cass at Great Balls of Fire. I would assume that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, you get one there, and then you get one at SummerSlam. And then you figure out where things fit with moving him in, or where he gets moved. Where he gets moved into, which is, you've got, they don't need to slingshot guys, hotshot guys like him into a main event spot now. There's plenty of time. That's one mistake I thought with Reigns. They just put him there and nobody wanted him there yet. And hopefully they learned from that. I hope. No guarantees because Finn Balor got the belt the second night he showed up.
Right.
So.
All right, so John, you said you were pissed. You said that you hated this week. So tell me what it was exactly that you hated about this week. Now that we've talked about it for an hour,
what about the? Well, I just hated. I hated SmackDown and that they took the case away.
Okay,
that just that in itself irritated the hell out of me. Because it's such a big deal, such a huge moment on Sunday, and then it's just like, yep, who gives a crap? That didn't happen. We're gonna give it away for free on television the next week.
Yeah,
it's just it is with anything. One little deal can ruin the whole thing. The show on Sunday was great. I had a fantastic time. I do want to watch it on television to see if it translates and to hear the crowd. I'm very fascinated to see how they play with crowd mics now that I was there in that building and know how flipping loud it was a lot of that show. But it was fun. I thought it was a very, very entertaining show. I mean, I wasn't pissed about the whole week, but that right there, that annoyed me to no end, what happened when they took that case away. That's the only thing that really pissed me off for the whole week.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Otherwise, like I said, I was entertained. That's all I look for. I just want to be entertained.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, you had a fun week. You hung out with Ric Flair. You went to Money in the Bank. We're a big shot with Bruce Pritchard and Conrad Thompson.
Yep.
Hey, that's tough living.
Hoping I get mentioned at some point on their podcast on Friday.
Isn't it funny? You've been in the radio business for how long?
Yeah. What, seven years in St. Louis, nine overall, yeah.
Okay. And I started in 1999, interned in 98, 99, okay. And actually worked on a show that did a lot of wrestling things. And I've covered a lot of great athletes. And the stuff that nerds me out is when I get around wrestling people.
Uh-huh.
Don't care. I've been in plenty of locker rooms and interviewed Hall of Famers and some of the greatest players in every sport. And Brother Love shows up. Holy crap, this is a huge deal.
I you know what, I'm the same way. There's the memories that I have, the cool stories that I have, that probably have nothing to do with like the greatest athletes that I've been around, I would think. Just some of
Go ahead.
Yeah, some of the situations, and you know this too, some of the situations you find yourself in this job end up giving you the best stories.
Well, that's true. That is true. It's the unexpecteds that end up being the most fun.
Exactly.
I did get a kick. One of the great things I do appreciate about being able to go down and meet those guys on Sunday was being able to relay to Brother Love, Bruce Pritchard, something that I will never forget. And he appreciated when I told him that my mother hated him and was disgusted by him more than anybody else in the wrestling business. Just every time he came on television. And he was at one of the live events in St. Louis doing a show. Anytime my mother just hated Bruce Pritchard. And he was smiling ear to ear. Couldn't have been more happy. How many other businesses are there where you can tell a man, my mother hated you? And he said, I did my job.
Because I got to stand up there while the VIP people were meeting him, and then going up, and after CMAR and I packed everything away on Sunday and we were getting ready to leave, there were still people, you know, shaking their hands and getting pictures of them after the event was all over, and just kind of standing there and hearing people go up to Bruce and just go, I hated you as a kid. It's just, and you see, yeah, you do see the joy on his face when he hears that, because he knows that he did well.
Wrestling is a weird business, my friend.
Yeah, it is. All right. Well, we will do it again next week. Hopefully you enjoyed everything this week. What is, next week. Next week will be good. The week after that, I think we might have to take a week off.
Why, what's that?
4th of July and Hudson's birthday.
Oh, yeah. I won't be watching John Cena, the free agent, show up.
Yeah.
I'll be missing that, along with most of the country.
But Wednesday, I'll be at the Wednesday, July 5th, on Hudson's birthday, I will be at the Cardinal game with him.
That's awesome. So, yeah. Well, that'll be fun.
Yeah.
So well, damn, I just realized we're ending the show. We didn't even talk about Vince Russo. Well, what a shame. Well, that's okay.
You know what? I DM'd with him yesterday about times available to come on the show. I will, you know what? I think I will, I'll circle back on that Thursday or Friday and try to see if I can book him for the radio show on Saturday or Sunday.
Well, I wish you great luck with that, bro.
We follow each other on Twitter and we can DM now. I slid into his DMs.
Well, congratulations on that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's a fan of mine, but I'm glad that he likes you.
Well, I mean, he follows me. I don't know if there's liking or disliking. I don't think I've done anything to make that happen one way or the other.
He'll look for anybody who's going to help further his career. That's what he's looking for.
That's why I want to see what the reaction is. I want to see what happens on the Pritchard podcast and then go from there.
They won't do anything.
They'll have to revisit it at some point. I mean, they started off.
Why?
Because that's how they started off. We'll see, though. Follow us. Follow us both on Twitter to find out what we will be doing with that. Until then, this has been the Going Overtime Podcast. He's John Marasek. I'm Joe Roderick. We'll talk to you next week.